Today's program was brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, a couple of people who are no stranger to this show or to Heritage Radio Network. I want to say first that when I first met one of these two, Mr. Robert Simonson, he didn't have a cell phone. He only had a landline. And over the past 9 years or so, 8 or 9 years, I believe it has been since we met, he has now moved into the future quite substantially by creating with Mr. Martin Dudaroff the new cocktail app, which just launched yesterday. It's called Modern Classics of the Cocktail Renaissance, and it's a fantastic app, and they are here in the studio today to talk about the modern classics. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Damon. Glad to be back, and I'd like to say that I'm still a Luddite at heart.
Well, I wouldn't believe that by looking at the app. You've gotten pretty deep with these different modern classics, and some of them I know very well, maybe all too well, and some of them I'm really excited to get into. There's these different kind of categories in the modern classic app that you've kind of taken. Some of them are not super classic, but not super modern either, but they are very well known for us nowadays. Some of them are very regional to different parts of the world, and those are the ones that I'm really interested in trying out myself, because I haven't traveled the world admittedly enough, as I should have by this point in my life. But after this app, and after getting to it, I'm probably going to change a lot of my travel schedule around to check out the actual regional drinking of these places.
Well, you've been to Oklahoma, Damon. That's more than enough.
I know. I never been to heaven, but I've been to Oklahoma.
I love that song.
So, yeah. So you, the last time you were on the show, you had come out with the book, The Old Fashioned, which was a few years back. And
yeah, 2014.
And so, a lovely book. I've referenced it all the time. There's so many great books that I get to reference, but that's one of my favorite ones. It's usually within arm's reach at the bar. And also, as you know, the Old Fashioned is one of my favorite drinks. So it's easy for me. It's an easy read for me.
Well, it's a lot of people's favorite drink. You know, God be praised at this point.
And through all the research for that, you started finding some other cocktails that you really liked. You became a fan of cocktails in the cocktail bars about a decade ago, right when everything was starting up.
Almost exactly a decade ago, yes.
Yeah, and it looks like this is, to me, like when I looked at these cocktails, it's like... very much a passion project, and it's something you like compiling these different cocktail recipes. It's something that you had to experience by going to all these places.
Well, I've been lucky. The past 10 years, a lot of these cocktails were created, and so I watched them be born, and I was in the bars, you know, when they were served, and drank a lot of them. Martin has, you know, had his feet on the ground in the scene a lot longer than I have, you know, 15 to 20 years, so he's probably drunk more of them. But a little background, I should tell you, I mean, the idea for an app which cataloged all the modern classics of the cocktail renaissance was Martin's, and he came to me with it, with the idea, and I liked it immediately. Martin, why did you want to do this?
I think that it was born of a couple of things. One was just that I happen to have a product line, and this would fill a hole. I had a lot of old drinks covered. I had a lot of contemporary kind of world far-flung experimental drinks covered, and I had some specific bars or genres really well covered, but I could see all kinds of stuff that people really like today that wasn't covered. And a lot of those were drinks that are now in this new app, or at least drinks that we considered for it. And the other thing was just that I spend most of my time in old cocktail books and weeding through them, and there's always this kind of separation between countless recipes, many of them being redundant, just thousands upon thousands of recipes that have been printed over the last 150 years, and then this hovering over them, these classic cocktails, which are a little amorphous, but they're the ones that people ultimately keep coming back to. And I've been in this scene long enough that I was sort of acutely aware that there's a lot of communication in this business, maybe not a tremendous amount of reflection. I'm not even sure that reflection is entirely welcome in this business. But it occurred to me it would be interesting to find out. And I looked around at who might be able to do this, because I knew I couldn't, to speak to what Robert was saying earlier, I actually have not had a lot of these drinks. I had a kind of a personal experience in the early days of the cocktail renaissance, which we did not call it at that time. So I was familiar with those drinks, but there are a lot of contemporary drinks that I have not had. A lot of these drinks in this app I have never had, and I'm looking forward to trying in the future.
Well, you have the recipes now.
I do now have the recipes, and I believe that they're the right recipes, which is good. And Robert was the obvious person to do this for a number of reasons. Being truly independent, a truly independent entity was one of them, and the other is that I knew that he'd been working on a history of the cocktail renaissance, which meant his mind was already in the right place, and he probably had already done a lot of the legwork inadvertently, and that's how we got here.
Oh, no, it wasn't inadvertent. It was advertent. The book he's referring to is, it's going to be called A Proper Drink. It's going to be put out by 10 Speed in the fall. So for the past 2 years, I've been interviewing people, up over 200 people, on three different continents, asking them about their role in the history of the recent cocktail revival, and just trying to get that history on paper, because it hadn't been done yet. And at the end of every interview, I always ask them the same question. It's like, what are the modern classic cocktails in your opinion? And a lot of them all said the same thing. Everyone would always bring up, say, the Penicillin by Sam Ross, or the Espresso Martini by Dick Bradsell, or maybe the Gin Gin Mule by Audrey Saunders. But then they'd have different opinions, and so I'd just catalog all this stuff and, log it in my brain. So when Martin came to me, yes, I was, already thinking about this very hard.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, to note, before the show, Robert, you and I were talking about the app and about the selection of cocktails on this app, and you said that you have had about 30... like a third of these cocktails, the 99 cocktails so far that are on the app, actually made for you by the creators.
Yes, it's a fetish of mine. When I find the bartender, and I know that they've made a drink that sort of constitutes a modern classic, I say, can you please make that for me?
Because, what's really cool about this, too, is that you can, I'd say most of these you can actually have them made, as opposed to, say, no one's going to get a Blue Blazer made by Jerry Thomas.
No.
It's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
More is the pity.
Yeah. Till we finalize time travel, it's not going to happen. But what's cool about this is that you can actually have pretty much all of these made by the creators, and that's just something that's never really been compiled so much throughout these years.
No, and it's one of the reasons, I mean, why we live in one of the greatest cities in the world. I mean, this is what you're talking about is mainly possible here in New York City. There are, if we could get Audrey Saunders actually behind the bar at the Pegu Club, we can easily get like 20 of these drinks right now in New York made by the person who invented them. It's less possible in London or San Francisco or Chicago, but it is possible in those cities to a certain extent.
Yeah. And you said also, you know, when you're putting these recipes together, the great thing about it, too, is that you, like to expand on that point, you can actually talk directly to the creator and nail down the recipe the exact way that they would make it for you. You know, a lot of these old cocktail books, like Martin was saying, you know, you've got all these different recipes for the same cocktail over the years, and they get repressed. Sometimes the garnish changes, the specs change, and sometimes they just leave out certain aspects of the whole recipe altogether. But what's cool about this is you can actually go straight to the source, and it documents the time and the place, and it leaves out any kind of guesswork with the cocktail and its origin and etymology. It's really, really important because often, as you both know, writing about cocktails, it's a lot of times you don't get a chance to like edit so much and do like some fact checking. And what's cool about this is it's all that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the I'm going to sidetrack a little bit, but what were like some of your favorite drinks that you actually had, that you guys have had, like made by the creators?
Oh, Martin, you used to
you
used to patronize some of these early bars when they opened.
I also wanted to ask, like, some of these, I mean, obviously you won't be able to get them made in the bar where they were created. Like, you're not going to be able to go to the Rainbow Room and have Dale make you something. But
that's true, although I believe I've had every one of Audrey's drinks made by her in each of the bars she created them in. I certainly have had a number of Phil Ward's drinks mixed by him. Again, that all comes back to living in New York City, I guess.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason that I hang out at Long Island Bar, which is a fine bar in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn, is that Toby Cicchini and Phil Ward regularly bartend there, and I can ask them directly for the drinks that they invented. It took me years, but I worked up the courage to ask Toby to make me a cosmopolitan.
I did that recently as well.
And he didn't mind at all.
No.
He was happy to do it.
Absolutely.
And I said, so you have Absolute Citron behind the bar? He says, I always have it here in case I need to make a cosmopolitan.
Yeah. So. I had it, and you know what? It was delicious.
It's a delightful drink. It gets slagged on quite a lot. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's what it is.
It'd be better with tequila, but, you know.
But it sort of reminded me, the first cosmopolitan I had was in 1991 at a bar called Zoe in Soho. And I wasn't into cocktails at that point. And I don't know why I asked for a cocktail, but I asked for something new. And the bartender said, well, how about this new drink, Cosmopolitan? And he made it for me. And I thought, wow. I mean, in 1991, that was exciting.
Yeah. I think it was probably just as exciting in 2015 or 16 to have Toby make it for you as it was back then, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Robert and Martin about the modern classics of the cocktail renaissance.
And today's break song is called Better Forget. It's by Zooli. We'll be right back on Heritage Radio Network. Jackie. Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper & King's distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. The stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper & Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper & Kings, pure copper, pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.
And we are back. We have been having a good time talking about the modern classics with Martin Dudenhoff and Robert Simonson. So, okay, let's talk about this, guys. What to you is a modern classic? What are the qualifications to give something that title?
Yeah, of course, that's all important. And one of the first things that Martin and I talked about when we were putting together this thing. As I said, I was working on that book, so I had plenty of time to think about, you know, what qualifies and why. And we sort of outline it in the introduction to the app. The first thing that I think is critical is the drink has to have, it has to have traveled beyond the bar that it was created. If a bar just stays, if a cocktail stays at one bar, well, it's not going to become a classic. It's just going to stay there. So it moves on to other bars in that city, then moves perhaps on to other cities, and then moves perhaps to other countries. So that's one of the criterion. And the other two are sort of contingent on that first one. One that other bartenders, fellow bartenders who did not create that drink, you know, taste it and think, well, this is significant. This is really good, and it's good enough to be on my bar's menu. So you get that bartender respect, and it flows throughout the community, which is very tight throughout the world at this point. And the other one is, of course, the customers have to like it. It has to be a drink that they're going to order again and again. Otherwise, why do you have it on the menu? And so, like, the penicillin fills all these categories. It was first served at Milk and Honey. It very quickly traveled around New York and then other cities. Bartenders respect it. People love it. People who are not into cocktails at all know what a penicillin at this point. You'll see
Brooklyn Brewery made a beer out of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what Sam Ross said to me. He said the moment that he realized that the penicillin had become a thing is when Garrett Oliver approached him and said, you want to make a beer based on this cocktail. Because before that, Garrett Oliver had only made a beer based on one cocktail, the Manhattan. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
That's extremely impressive.
Yeah, so that's what we went with, and we ended up dividing the app into four categories. One was bona fide cocktail classics, you know, what we feel is they're undisputed, you know, that, you know, the argument can be soundly made.
And that's just 26?
It's 23.
23. Roughly 15 years?
You mean where they range?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that the
Cosmo goes back to the Cosmo, so it goes back quite like 25 years.
Okay. So, 23.
Yeah. And then we have what we call sort of, not derogatorily in any way, but second-tier classics, which have legs and have, you know, been seen in various bars around the country and the world, but are not as famous as these other ones. Third, we have what we call foundational drinks, drinks that were significant, created some waves at the beginning, got people's creative juices going, got people's bartenders' minds working. Maybe you don't see them anymore today, but once upon a time, you know, they had an influence. Some of those drinks at the Rainbow Room were like that. A drink like the Cable Car from San Francisco, you don't see that on many menus anymore, but that was a revelation, you know, 15 or 17 years ago. The fourth category, which Martin encouraged me to do, are critics' choices. There are just about 13 or 15 of these. These are not classics. These are just drinks that I like, and I think they should be classics.
Cool. So, to me, a modern classic, it actually... I guess I lean more towards some of the, like, the like, first tier kind of stuff, where it's stuff, like, it, like more like ingredients that have been around for a very long time. It's just so happens that they haven't been mixed together in a certain way or claimed by anyone yet, you know? Like, you know, back in the late 19th century, when all the cocktail books started coming out, it was like the Wild West, man. And everyone, you know, 1,000 different martini variations, but you change just one thing. Maybe it's just like a twist of orange instead of lemon. And then, all right, it's got a new name now. Done. And like, if you were one of those founding pioneers and if you published it first, you could have essentially 20 different Manhattans with different garnishes and give them all different names. And, well, you invented all those. If it came out in the press, if it was published, then that was yours. So what I find really interesting about things like, you know, Andre Saunders, like Old Cuban and Oaxaca Old Fashioned and the Gold Rush. I mean, my God, like everyone knows what a Gold Rush is. And
that's a very influential drink.
Yeah. And but, you know, something like the Gold Rush, those ingredients have been around forever.
It's just, yeah, it's a whiskey sour with honey.
Yeah.
But nobody did that. So
no one did it.
You can make that small change and, you know, and the world is yours.
What do you think one of the more modern techniques would be with one of these modern classics? Like, outside of classic ingredients, do you think that there's a technical aspect in the way that it's produced, stirred chicken, garnished, something that really stands out that wouldn't be necessarily something that was done back in the day that...
Well, there are two obvious examples. The Benton's Old Fashioned, nobody in the golden age of cocktails in the late 1800s was bacon fat washing whiskey. I think we can say that safely. Yeah. The other one would be the barrel-aged Negroni. That's interesting in that it's a drink that existed for a long time. The only difference is the process. You know, Jeffrey Morgenthaler put it in a barrel for 7 weeks, took it out, and created a worldwide trend. That, I believe, had been done from time to time before Prohibition. People would actually put cocktails in barrels. You can find documentation, but it wasn't widespread. So those are two.
And that one is huge. I mean,
it's ridiculously huge.
I mean,
I've never seen a cocktail trend spread faster than barrel aging.
It's, I mean, although it's not a cocktail trend, as far as the drinks trend, it definitely like put a shadow on the pickleback. But yeah, I mean, nowadays, like everywhere, like almost like any cocktail bar that you go to, I'm gonna say almost any cocktail bar you go to anywhere, really, there's a barrel somewhere.
They have at least one barrel aged cocktail.
Yeah, and it's insane. I mean, there's one from. Oh, geez, now I'm forgetting the name. It's a place in D.C. They are leather aging a cocktail, like an old Bota bag.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But, I mean, it's... The barrel, though, is like... It's been such a big trend, and it spread so fast that, you know, all these distilleries that used to have these used barrels just for experimenting with, now you're on a wait list to get one.
Exactly.
So that's pretty impressive. But, you know,
what's a modern technique? It spread easily because it's idiot proof. You get one of those barrels, you put the cocktail in, you wait 7 weeks, you strain it. You're not going to screw it up.
Yeah. Well, I like...
As long as you soak the barrel first.
which is what I did. I did not soak the barrel first. So a lot of Campari went on the floor.
Oh, man.
Do you mind if I like turn the table here?
Yeah,
now
sure.
You've got a drink on this list, Damon, the Hard Start.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to hear from a bartender's perspective how they know one of their drinks has taken off and is being done beyond their bar.
Well, that's a good question. to me, it's definitely, if it's being made in a different city, that's the first step.
And do you hear about it by chance, or do they ask your permission?
Absolutely. I don't think that that's a... I would be really surprised if a bartender turned someone down or, like, got upset about seeing their cocktail on another menu. I've seen some of my cocktails on menus in Virginia, California. I know that, like, with the Hard Start itself, it's such a quick... I mean, it is... And I really appreciate you putting it on your app, and that's very flattering to me.
Well, I remember the first time I had it, and... You know, it was remarkable. I mean, you were such a pusher of Fernet back then. I think you were one of the foremost in the city. And then, you know, it just didn't go away. You know, yeah. It's like everyone knew what that drink was in New York anyway.
There is a technique involved with it. But because there's kind of a rule where you're supposed to serve them in twos, in pairs, because you're supposed to grab both bottles of Fernet and Brancamenta, two glasses, pour one... of each in the two glasses that you're holding in one hand, and then you turn the glasses around and then pour the other half into the other glass, thus making a 50-50 mix and then having two glasses. So 2, 4, 6, 8, there's, if you have seven people in your party and you make eight, you're always going to find that eighth person somewhere who's going to want to join you in that. But I have noticed that a lot of bars have pre-bottled it, and they have it in their well just ready to go at all times. And that to me is really cool too, because that means that they're serving that drink so often that they went ahead and pre-batched it. But I do find it really flattering when I get a boomerang from another city, traveling shot or cocktail, and, you know, always packaged in a wacky way, and it's, you know, someone will send me from, like, L.A., they'll send a Hard Start to me, and, like, that's kind of when you know, like, if somebody's sending your own drink to you from another city in another state or country, then you know you've kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of it, isn't it?
You've kind of hit that level. But, yeah, and you know, the Hard Start was meant to be, in true, like, early cocktail fashion, it's meant to be a bracer. It was invented as a brunch shot. That's why it's called a Hard Start. You pop the clutch and get going.
It's a great name.
But I've heard it called a Heart Stopper. I've heard it called a lot of other things. So
yeah. It is that as well.
Yeah. But yeah, it's. I think what's really cool about, you know, looking through the list of all these cocktails, a lot of these people are buddies of mine, and it's just great to see that, you know, these cocktails have gotten to a level where they are known, you know, like and enjoyed, and especially mm-hmm. amongst the bar crowd, but also to their customer base as well. The Broncolata,
favorite CIA, of mine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. These are great things. I mean, the Green Point. How did that not exist 100 years ago? You know,
who knows? It may have, and we just don't know about it. It's a great drink. For those who haven't had it, basically a Manhattan with some chartreuse in there.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
That should have been right.
I mean, Martin knows about this. In the early days, it was much easier to invent new drinks, you know, mm-hmm. because there weren't so many mixologists and they hadn't tried so many things.
It's amazing how... yes, that's true. The pool of available ingredients was also much, much smaller.
Sure.
It's what is kind of my bugaboo, just because my predicament spending so much time in old books is just the staggering amount of plagiarism, pointless plagiarism, that, you know, given all of the opportunities they had to be inventive, how little innovation there actually was in the grand scheme of things. That actually kind of possibly gets me back to something you were saying earlier, Damon, about associating classic cocktails with classic ingredients. I think that's an interesting aspect in this whole attempt to apply critical thought to the canon or the body of work, there are a lot of great drinks that I thought might wind up in this collection that didn't. And some bartenders who aren't really represented in here. And that's inevitably going to be something that people who go looking at this list go looking for themselves in it, or looking for their personal favorites. They might be surprised to not find in them. And a lot of that does actually come back to ingredients. To take a really extreme example, one mixologist I have a great deal of respect for is Tony Conigliaro. So Tony Conigliaro makes fantastic drinks. The only problem is that the only person who can make Tony Conigliaro's drinks
right, I mean,
is Tony Conigliaro.
That's true.
I think he knows that. He chose a certain path,
yeah.
You know, with very complicated techniques that it was almost, you could have predicted at the beginning of his career that he was not going to invent a modern classic cocktail because we can't recreate them very easily.
Not everyone has a centrifuge and a rotovap in their bar, you know?
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he hasn't created delicious drinks and does every day.
Even some mixologists are very oriented, particularly today, towards extremely precise formula in using often a large number of extremely specific ingredients mm-hmm. that aren't necessarily homemade, but they may be rare. They may be difficult to come by. And we have a number of bars that do this extremely well, but they also almost immediately disqualify themselves from this kind of, well, at least from the rules as we've defined them for what a modern classic is, because, again, the bar becomes too high to replicate the drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to catch on, at least not in the form that it was created in originally. It might get adapted, a sort of a pigeon version of it hypothetically might catch on.
Another good example of that, a very esteemed bartender, Eben Freeman, has done a lot of innovation. We all know his work when he was at WD-50 and Taylor and many other bars. And but his drinks were too complex to duplicate. I mean, everyone, well, in the cocktail world knows this drink called the Whalen that was served at Taylor. And it was basically, bourbon and Coke. But the Coke was smoked, and you needed a certain kind of equipment. And so if you didn't have that kind of equipment in order to smoke the Coke, you're not going to make this drink. You know, it's a famous drink, but it can't really become a classic.
Also, you should never smoke Coke. Just saying that for the kids out there.
Yeah. Stay safe, kids.
Stay safe. Well, you know what? We're right at the end of the show. I'm really psyched for you guys on creating this app and getting it out there. It just came out yesterday. And now we're going to go to my bar, to Grand Army, and enjoy some modern classics. And I'll tell you what, for the people out there listening, if you are one of the three first people to bring up this very special promo code at the bar tonight, they're going to be handing out three free downloads, but you have to be there in person to get it. So come on out to Grand Army. It's 336 State Street in downtown Brooklyn, and hang out with Martin. Hang out with Robert, hang out with myself, Katie Stapp, Kevin Baird. Everyone's going to be there. And
you can get one of the drinks on the app, the Siesta, made by its author, Katie Stipe. She will be there tonight, 5 to 7.
And what a charmer she is. all right, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm really happy to have you both back in the studio. And, yeah, let's go have a drink, y'all. All right.
Thanks, Damon.
That's it for this week. Cheers, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.